Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back for the second hour of Catholic Answers Live. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and this week we seem to have saved the very best for last. As you likely know, this year marks the 500th anniversary of the beginnings of the Reformation. A lot being said and done in celebration, or in some cases lament, about that fateful time. In fact, our Catholic Answers Conference will be all about that when we meet this September here in San Diego. A wonderful new book from Professor Peter Kraft, Catholics and Protestants, What We Can Learn from Each Other, maybe takes a bit of a different approach than many of the books that will be published this year or many of the comments that will be made in trying to find those ways in which we as Catholics or we as Protestants, as Christians together, can learn from one another and move forward. Dr. Kraft is a professor of philosophy at Boston College and at the King's College in New York City. He's a regular contributor to a whole bunch of Christian publications, and he's in very wide demand as a speaker and at conferences and so on. The author of more than 55 books, including The Handbook of Christian Apologetics, Christianity for Modern Pagans, Fundamentals of the Faith, and now Catholics and Protestants, What We Can Learn from Each Other. Dr. Peter Kraft, thank you so much for being with us on Catholic Answers Live.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
And now, do you imagine there are folks who might take offense at what we can learn from each other? That is the whole point of the Reformation, isn't it? That we are headed in two different directions, that we're going away from one another.
That was not Luther's intent. He did not try to set up a rival church. He tried to reform the only one. His views became rather different later on, but it remains true that despite our great differences, we must begin by listening to each other and learning what we can from each other. That's true of all dialogue. If you're narrow-minded and bigoted to begin with, you're not going to learn anything, and it's not going to be any dialogue, just argument.
And the dialogue between, well, if you mentioned Luther, but in between Catholics and Lutherans in recent decades, particularly the agreement on faith and I can't remember now. Is it faith and grace?
Faith and works.
Faith and works.
Justification.
It seems to have produced fruit. Would you agree with that?
Yes. In fact, that's the single issue that most provoked the Reformation. And if you ask any evangelical Protestant what's the biggest difference between Protestants and Catholics, they'll probably say that's the one. How do you get to heaven? Is it a one-part ticket, faith alone, or is it a two-part ticket, faith and good works? And the two churches, Lutheran and Catholic, excommunicated each other at the time of the Reformation. So it seemed that that's a non-negotiable issue. And yet, it's been negotiated without compromise to the satisfaction of both sides. Thus, the decree on justification has almost ended the main issue of the Reformation. One Protestant theologian, I think it was Mark Knoll, wrote, "The Reformation is over." I made that one of my chapter titles. It's an exaggeration, but it's a shocking half-truth.
You know, I when I was reading that part of the book, I was struck by how you set the whole question up. Is it's impossible to reconcile these positions, and yet the impossible. I may be using the wrong word, but essentially that's what I think your point was. It seemed to everyone it's impossible that these two positions could be reconciled, and yet it does seem that they are reconciled now. This is a work of the Holy Spirit. Am I summing that up?
Yes, it is, and God can do anything. With God, all things are possible. But on the human side, I think the strategy was basically to reverse the direction of thought that had been going on for 500 years. In the past, it had been simply to justify and explain our position and for them to explain their position more adequately and to grow more leaves on the tree, so to speak, and more branches. Instead, we turned back to our roots, our common roots, especially in the Bible, and explored them. Once we were unified for 1,500 years, around what were we unified? What did we understand by faith and by works and by love and by justification and by sanctification? And by that reverse study, we came to the conclusion that we were saying the same essential thing in different words. And so is the New Testament. Paul's doctrine of justification by faith and James's insistence that faith without works is dead are perfectly compatible. It's not an either-or. It's a both-and.
But it takes work to get there.
It does. And in order for that work to happen, both head and heart have to be involved. And for hundreds of years, the heart was not involved. We condemned each other to hell and to battlefield graves. And then we started listening to each other. And that produced genuine results without compromise. Because there can't be real unity except in truth.
And without the hearts engaged, we were not open to that truth, to that way forward. I wonder.
The heart pumps blood to the brain and tells the brain to listen or to shut down. So both have to be involved.
Right. I should give out the number 888-318-7884 is the number if you would like to talk with Professor Peter Kreift about his new book, Catholics and Protestants, What We Can Learn from Each Other. 888-318-7884. I wonder, Professor Kreift, how much you think is the problem of ecumenism or the need for ecumenism made more urgent by the fact that the world doesn't seem to care whether you're a Protestant or Christian. It's turning against you if you're a Christian in any way or against the values of the Christian faith. That is, we're facing the same outward pressures. How does that figure in, do you think?
A common enemy always welds brothers together that were feuding. In two world wars, for instance, the Irish and the English who fought against each other fought together against Germany. So with the Western world becoming more and more anti-Christian, more and more ideologically secularist, we're gradually realizing that we've got to do this together or not at all.
And I wonder if you, when you think about, well, what Catholics and Protestants can teach one another, the way to ask the question is, how do you respond to the person who says, well, the fullness of truth is in the Catholic Church. Why would I need Protestants to teach me something?
For the same reason, we need time to unravel and unpack and explore that truth. Certainly, we understand more about even the basic doctrines like the Trinity and the two natures of Christ today than we did 1900 years ago. So Protestants can prod us and help us to understand our own truth and how it relates to the aspects of truth that they have. I use metaphors like the fire in the fireplace, the fire being the personal relationship with Christ and the fireplace being the church with all its doctrines and sacraments. Another metaphor would be the common root of a plant and the different fruits of the plant. When we trace ourselves back to the common root, we find genuine unity. And when we emphasize both the fire and the fireplace, as both sides are doing, Catholics understand the Bible more profoundly and Protestants emphasize the church much more. That's been happening. The tide is turning. We're still a long, long way from union. But we're moving in the right direction.
And you thought it was important to say a hopeful word as we celebrate this 500, celebrate, or as I said, many lament the 500th anniversary of the Reformation.
Yeah, because that's very clear in the New Testament. Jesus agonized over the divisions in the church. Look at his prayer in John 17. And St. Paul had zero tolerance for denominationalism when he found it in Corinth. So this is not an option. Pope John Paul II made that clear in his encyclical Ut Unum Sint. This is not an addition to the gospel. This is an essential part of it, just as the social justice part is an essential part, not an addition.
888-318-7884 is the number. We have Professor Kreift, we have come up against what we need to take a break. And when we come back, a little more discussion, perhaps, and then we'll go to calls. That's all right with you?
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Your calls for Professor Kreift.
miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com. In Navigating the Tiber, how to help your friends and family journey towards the Catholic faith, Devin Rose draws from his own experience as a convert and Catholic apologist to help you guide your Protestant friends and family members on that harrowing river voyage. Not only does he equip you with the knowledge from Scripture, the early church, and Christian history, he shows you how to deal with the common aspects of a convert's journey. The river to Rome is unruly but crossable. Order your copy of Navigating the Tiber and help your friends and family have smoother sailing on their way to Christ's church. Get your copy of Navigating the Tiber today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. In a series of short, easy-to-read chapters, Trent covers the whole range of common topics, starting with why we believe in anything at all and answering all the common objections to the Catholic faith, both doctrinal and moral. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Better yet, it's only $3 a copy when you order in bulk. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Very, very happy to have with us Dr. Peter Kraft, a well-known philosopher and apologist and advocate of sense in a world that often has lost its sense, and now the author of Catholics and Protestants, What Can We Learn from Each Other? The number, if you have questions on that topic, 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. And with calls piling up, I think we'll go right to calls. Bill in Sacramento, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Your question for Professor Kraft.
Well, Professor, on Pope Pacelli's commendation of Karl Barth as the greatest theologian since St. Thomas, can you tell us what development of doctrine Karl Barth accomplished that can be of use and interest to us as Catholics?
Well, Karl Barth may have been the greatest Protestant theologian of the 20th century, but I certainly don't think he's the greatest theologian since Thomas Aquinas. That's Pascal and Cardinal Newman and C.S. Lewis and others who I think would rank above him. But Barth was a great opponent of modernism or liberalism. I think he went to the extreme in his neo-orthodoxy in being suspicious of reason and natural theology, but he's certainly a great man. But I haven't learned that much from Barth. Most of what you find in Barth, you also find in St. Augustine.
Okay, Bill?
What's natural theology?
Natural theology is theology done by natural reason without presupposing divine revelation. And it can go a long way. It can refute atheism. It can prove some of the attributes of God. And you're left with, let's say, half of Christian doctrines that can be proved by reason rightly used. The other half, like the Trinity and God's choice to love us and to set up a church, that can't be proved by reason alone, because that depends on God's will.
Thank you very much, Bill, for that call. We go now to Renato calling from Asuncion, Paraguay, listening on the EWTN app. Renato, you are on with Dr. Peter Kraft. Your question, please.
Hello, good evening, Professor Kraft. Thank you for being there. I'm a big fan, always listening to Catholic Answers and, of course, your amazing talks or whatever. So I wanted to ask you regarding ecumenism. I think is the subject of the evening. And, you know, being a Catholic, a cradle Catholic myself, and having had my different stages of growth as a Catholic, I would argue that, for example, in my case, only recently, like the past 10 years or so, I've grown to appreciate what the Blessed Virgin and all her beauty and all her grandeur mean. And I consider myself a Catholic, even though I did not really, I was not really a Marian, or also the saints, you know, or other issues that I realize are most of the issues that separate us from our brothers in the other denominations.
Renato, I think it might be the distance of the connection. It's just a little bit hard to hear you. Could you just phrase the question for Dr. Kraft, please?
Sure. Would it be feasible to create like a head, the heads of the different denominations, the Pope and the different churches, like a meeting, say a yearly or monthly meeting where decisions for the whole church are taken, and then each one of the denominations has its own head for it. So work together on some major issues.
Okay, Renato, essentially, Dr. Graff, I don't know if you heard the question, and I'm not sure if our listeners did. But
not very well.
Well, he's asking if, from kind of a top-down perspective, if we could have a kind of union of the churches so that on a monthly basis, for example, the Pope would meet with the leaders of the other churches and make decisions together as a church, but each church would still have its own identity.
We're not at that stage yet. It's going to take many years, maybe many hundreds of years, before we can negotiate all our differences. We've got to do a lot of listening to each other and studying first.
Okay. Renato, thank you very much for that question. You win the Long Distance Call of the Day award. I wonder if, kind of just to follow up on Renato's question, Dr. Kraft, if you see in this the Anglican use and then the establishment of the personal ordinariates for Anglican Catholics, any model for the future, or is that just does that just apply in this special situation?
Oh, that's a wonderful model. In fact, every Sunday I attend an Anglican use mass. It's very reverent and very beautiful, and it's kind of the best of both worlds. But it's not a compromise. It's kind of like rating the Protestants for everything good that they have and using them ourselves. There's a lot of good stuff that we can have from them and use from them, including forms of worship. Liturgy is not like doctrine, a single absolute formulated in a creed so that the proposition is either true or false. The church has always had many different forms of liturgy and a lot of choice there.
Yeah, indeed. Let's go to another call. Craig in San Jose, California, listening on Immaculate Radio. Your question for Dr. Peter Kraft.
Yeah, hi. There, Professor Kraft. I'm going to have to talk just a minute here to get my question out good, but I thought that it's a good thing that that there's Orthodox and there's Protestant. I'm a lifelong Catholic. I'm not going anywhere. But, you know, throughout history, when the church has gotten too powerful and too big, you know, they're the only game in town, and they get corrupt. It just, you know, that's just the human condition. And instead of people falling away from the Catholic Church, you know, they have these other Christian churches like the Orthodox and Protestants to go to instead of, you know, completely falling away and even becoming atheists. So I think, you know, it's a good healthy competition that these other minor league churches exist. You know, the Catholic Church, they're the New York Yankees of baseball, you know. but we have these minor leagues, and it's just, you know, we can be ecumenical and get along and have our differences and argue. But I mean, as far as, you know, just saying, you know, you got to be Catholic and this and that. Well, you could say that, but you know, I wouldn't let it, you know, the end all to be all. And I, you know, anytime any organization gets too big and powerful, they're the only game in town, you're going to have the corruption because, you know, people are screwed up and that's just the way it
well,
is.
Well, I both agree and disagree with you. The church did get corrupt in the Middle Ages, especially around the time of the Renaissance. And any organization that has a human side is going to be subject to that. But the church never taught falsehood. It never taught false doctrines, no matter how corrupt the popes and the bishops may have gotten. And that's a miracle. And the church's purpose is to teach with the authority of Christ himself. He said to the apostles, "He who hears you hears me." So I don't agree that it's better that the church be split and that Protestants and Catholics and Orthodox differ on doctrine. I think that's a scandal. Plurality is good where you need plurality, forms of worship, for instance, and cultural differences. But plurality in truth, no. Either the Pope is infallible when he speaks ex cathedra or not. Either you need good works for salvation or not. Either Christ is really present in the Eucharist or not. That those things are not negotiable.
It strikes me that the Eucharistic thing. Oh, thank you very much, Craig, for that call. We really do appreciate the question. But Dr. Crave, the Eucharist, as this you know, as the Second Vatican Council said, the source and summit of our ecclesial life. It seems to me that the consequence of the Reformation is that many, many, many Christians, millions, are cut off from the Eucharist.
And that is tragic. Yes, indeed.
I wonder if that's...
In fact, if Catholics are right, then this is the most complete and perfect and intimate union with Christ that's possible in this life. It's like the spiritual marriage. On the other hand, if Protestants are right, then Catholics are the most ridiculous idolaters in the world. They're bowing down to bread and worshiping wine and thinking it's Almighty God.
Well,
this is a big issue,
and it seems like it's both a problem and an opportunity because there's a certain way in which as Catholics, one of the things we can do is continue to invite people back to the Eucharist and to find in the Gospels the reality of the Eucharist, to find in the letters of Paul, the early church, it's not a matter of we're right, you're wrong, or we want to beat somebody over the head. Mm-hmm. The Eucharist was what Christ intended, and we want to invite you back to it. Does that seem like a fruitful path to you?
Yes, indeed. And at the same time, we have to realize that it's the very same Christ that Protestants and Catholics love with all their hearts.
Yeah.
Even though we find him in the Eucharist in ways that they don't. Still, there's a much more profound agreement than the disagreement, however great the disagreement is.
And you mentioned liturgy as, you know, as a path, because we can see in liturgy, liturgy doesn't have to be black or white necessarily. There are all kinds of different colors there. What about sacred art? Do you think sacred art has the power to help us ecumenically?
It has a great power. I think the first Catholic thought I ever had in my life as a young Protestant, I must have been about 8 or 10 years old, was visiting a cathedral for the first time in my life. It was St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. We lived in New Jersey. I'd never seen anything like this before. I was in heaven. I turned to my father, who was an elder in the Reformed Church of America, a Calvinist church. I said, "Dad, this is a Catholic church, isn't it?" He said, "Yes." I said, "The Catholics are wrong, aren't they?" He said, "Yes, they're very wrong." So I said, "Well, how come their churches are so beautiful?" And he had no answer.
I see. Yeah.
No, I wasn't thinking. I wasn't thinking at the time, maybe someday I will become a Catholic. But it planted a doubt. Real doubt.
But it's fascinating that you asked Catholics are wrong in that question, in that moment, because beauty has a kind of resonance that makes one question in a different way. That, like, you almost needed a reassurance. They are wrong, right? Because this is beautiful.
You can't argue with beauty. You can argue with theologians. You can't argue with artists. And the greatest beauty we've ever seen in the world is the beauty of the saints. Nobody ever won an argument with Mother Teresa. Not because she was so clever. She wasn't, but she was a saint.
Right.
You can't refute a saint in argument.
And so your first Catholic thought was that. What was your first Protestant thought?
If the essence of Protestantism is the centrality of Christ and the absolute necessity of a total personal commitment to Christ, I think it was when I was coming home from Sunday school one day. I was confused, and I asked my father, "Dad, all this stuff that we learn in church and Sunday school, it's really only about one thing, right?" And he looked suspicious, and he said, "Well, what do you mean, just one thing? It's about many things." I said, "Well, it's just that we have to ask Jesus, what do you want me to do, and then do it, right?" And he smiled, and he said, "Yeah, you're absolutely right."
Well, that's beautiful to hear both your first Protestant thought and your first Catholic thought. Dr. Peter Kraft is our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Catholics and Protestants, What We Can Learn from Each Other is his latest book. If you'd like to talk with Dr. Kraft, 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. And we'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Released in the spring of 2014, The Protestant's Dilemma has taken the Catholic book world by storm, bringing hundreds of readers into the church. And with over 10,000 copies sold, it's still going strong. By taking a whole new approach to the way we look at the differences between the Catholic Church and Protestant beliefs, Devin Rose has opened the eyes of many Protestant brothers and sisters and made them take seriously the claims of the Catholic Church. The Protestant's Dilemma examines over 30 Protestant beliefs, showing with solid evidence, compelling reason, and gentle humor how the major tenets of Protestantism, if honestly pursued to their furthest extent, just don't make sense. The Protestant's Dilemma is the perfect book to give non-Catholics trying to work through their own nagging doubts, or for Catholics looking for a fresh way to deepen their understanding of the faith. Order your copy today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting Catholic.com. Also available as an ebook.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. In a series of short, easy-to-read chapters, Trent covers the whole range of common topics, starting with why we believe in anything at all, and answering all the common objections to the Catholic faith, both doctrinal and moral. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Better yet, it's only $3 a copy when you order in bulk. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This weekend on EWTN Radio, catch The Good Fight with Barbara McGuigan. Father Zachary Akers, director for the Fraternity of St. Peter, joins Barbara to discuss their new CD called Requiem, a Gregorian chant sung at the Mass for the Dead. The Good Fight with Barbara McGuigan starts at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. And after Catholic Answers Live today on Father Spitzer's Universe, Doug Keck and Father Robert Spitzer discuss contemplative prayer right here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. As I told you, we saved the best for last this week, I hope that didn't come out wrong. Dr. Peter Kraft is with us. Catholics and Protestants, what can we learn from each other is his latest book. And we've got a lot of calls, so I'm going to keep going to calls. Tony in San Jose, California, listening on Immaculate Radio. Tony, your question for Dr. Peter Kraft.
Hi. Yes, you mentioned that Catholics and Protestants can learn from each other. With the Catholic Church being having the fullness of the truth, is there another example in scientific law or natural law where you have something that is good or truth that can benefit from something that has error?
You can benefit from error negatively by seeing what's not the truth, but you can benefit, I think, from looking at Protestants by appreciating the common truths that you share with Protestants better from a variety of perspectives. For instance, the Bible. Is it simply a historical source book, or is it the living Word of God? And the centrality of Christ, that he's the center of everything. We believe that, but Protestants emphasize it so much that when we've forgotten it, which we often do, we need to be reminded of it. So I'm not suggesting that that our theology is defective, but just as when a Jew becomes a Christian, he says, now I'm a better Jew, a completer Jew. So when a Protestant becomes a Catholic, he becomes a better Protestant. All the truths in Protestantism is present in Catholicism. Yes, we do have the fullness of truth. But maybe one of the reasons God keeps Protestants around is to remind us of the forgotten aspects of our truth.
Tony?
Yeah, I guess that could be true with all religions, and I guess that's what troubles me a little bit is, I mean, there are some major, major things that we disagree with as far as, like, the Eucharist and forgiveness of sins, that it's just hard to kind of get around in that. And
I don't see how we can get around it, no. There are disagreements. But we didn't see how we could get around the question of justification by faith alone or by faith and works, and we did negotiate that without compromise. So I wouldn't put any limits on what God can do.
Thank you very much, Tony, for that call. We go now to another Tony, this one traveling through northern Minnesota and listening on 13.7 AM. Second Tony, you are on with Dr. Peter Kraft. What's your question?
Hi, this is a great honor and privilege. Professor, I have read over the past two or three years about three or four of your books and seen you on YouTube, and we're both Protestant. Both the last year and a half, my wife and I have read, I think, three of your books out loud each morning. I'm ready to convert. She is not. She is a better person than I am, really. She's a saint. What should I do?
God invented you to teach her what's the true church, and God invented her to teach you what's a true saint. So listen and learn from each other and do it together as much as possible.
Okay, good answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Are you willing to learn how to be a saint, Tony?
Of course.
Okay. All right, then. There you go. You've got your marching orders. Thanks very much for that call. Really appreciate it. Mark in Chicago, Illinois, listening on EWTN. Mark, you are on with Dr. Peter Kraft. What's your question?
Yeah. Hi. It's a pleasure and it's an honor. I don't have a philosophical question, but basically, it really hits kind of to the point, you know, children at age 11, 12, 13, kind of really grapple with the with their Protestant friends, their best friends, and they don't realize that they're Protestants or they're Catholic, but they're learning as they go on, and they're asking, you know, my kids were asking me why are they going to a different church, how come they don't have, and they don't understand anything about Mary or this, or they don't have Mary. What is how as a parent, or even as a child, when they ask, it says, you know, what are we? Are we Christians? Are we Catholics? Because that denomination kind of falls into the cracks of the conversation. And I want to be a good parent and obviously say that, hey, we're all children of God and baptized in God and Jesus.
Tell them the whole truth, but don't hold anything back. Yes, we worship the same God, we trust in the same Jesus, but we're in different churches because 500 years ago we had a split, and we seriously differ about some issues like Mary and the saints and the Pope, and we believe this and they don't. They're good people anyway, and they love the same God, and they're our brothers and sisters, and we hope that we get together someday.
Does that help you, Mark?
We invited him over to our church, to a Catholic mass. And they were incredibly they were in awe of the Eucharistic Mass.
Yep. That's a good thing to do at almost any age, because you learn by experience, by seeing, not just by thinking. In fact, even adults who are wondering whether to become Protestants or Catholics shouldn't just read books about us. They should worship. One of the things that that I ask inquirers to do who are wondering whether the Catholic Church is the true church or not, go into a Catholic church and go up to the front pew when nobody's around and pray to Christ. You're a Christian, you don't know whether you should be a Catholic. All right, Christ, are you really present in the Eucharist? Is that really you there? And if so, draw me. Bring me home. And if it's not you, then please don't send me away. And if you mean that with all your heart, he'll do that. He promised. Seek and you shall find, he said.
Mark, thank you very, very much for that call. Working our way through the calls, we go to Dan in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on 1460 AM. Dan, your question for Dr. Peter Kraft.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. Doctor, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I'm someone who was raised Catholic, and I have attended Catholic school and the Catholic Church for many years. Recently, through some friendships and introductions to other, you know, aspects of some Protestant faiths, to be honest with you, I've been somewhat troubled, at least for me locally in St. Louis, over what I see in the Catholic Church sometimes. I feel like my Catholic friends and many of the people that I grew up with, like you said, sometimes are focused on what I would believe to be rather unimportant doctrine, in my humble opinion. I think that some of the Protestant churches I've visited much better know the Bible and much better speak what I think is the integral truth of the gospel. So I think we have a lot to learn from each other, and I appreciate this conversation. And, you know, I don't know if we can ever get to a point where, you know, we say that on the essentials of the faith we agree. I understand the Eucharist is probably a hill too far. But I think conversations like this are very strong, because I've found quite a bit of people that are very close, in my opinion, to Jesus in other churches. And I think, at least in my local area, they have some things that me and my peers have lacked.
Yep, it works both ways. Both of us need to listen to each other. And when we do that, we'll learn something new. Something will happen that we don't expect. That's almost guaranteed. And what we share in common is infinitely more important than what divides us, even though what divides us is important, too.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much for that call. We have to take a quick break, and we will be back with more calls for Dr. Peter Kraft. The number, 888-318-7884. If you prefer spelling it out, it's 888-31-TRUTH. 888-318-7884. Catholics and Protestants, What We Can Learn from Each Other is the latest book from the prolific Dr. Peter Kraft. We'll be back with your questions for Dr. Kraft right after this.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
Released in the spring of 2014, The Protestant's Dilemma has taken the Catholic book world by storm, bringing hundreds of readers into the church. And with over 10,000 copies sold, it's still going strong. By taking a whole new approach to the way we look at the differences between the Catholic Church and Protestant beliefs, Devin Rose has opened the eyes of many Protestant brothers and sisters and made them take seriously the claims of the Catholic Church. The Protestant's Dilemma examines over 30 Protestant beliefs, showing with solid evidence, compelling reason, and gentle humor how the major tenets of Protestantism, if honestly pursued to their furthest extent, just don't make sense. The Protestant's Dilemma is the perfect book to give non-Catholics trying to work through their own nagging doubts, or for Catholics looking for a fresh way to deepen their understanding of the faith. Order your copy today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting Catholic.com. Also available as an ebook.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. John 6:52 describes how the Jews quarreled among themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" Jesus replied, "Unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you do not have life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. For my flesh is real food, and my blood is real drink. If his listeners were mistakenly taking him too literally, he could easily have clarified the matter for them. He was not talking cannibalism here, though some have thought so. He was speaking sublime mystery. He was speaking of the living sign of his passion that the Eucharist was to be. The appearance of bread and wine on the altar tells the story. That his body gave of its blood to the death remains the memorial of his infinite love for us that we celebrate at Mass. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us on this Friday afternoon or evening, depending on where you are. Dr. Peter Kraft is our guest. Catholics and Protestants, What Can We Learn from Each Other is his latest book. The lines are full. So, Dr. Kraft, if it's all right with you, I'm just going to keep going to calls.
Certainly.
John in Silver Springs, Maryland, listening on 1260 AM. Your question for Dr. Kraft.
Dr. Kraft, pleasure. I'm just curious as to your position on the current state of affairs with the Latin rite of priestly celibacy. Do you think it should be lifted in light of the shortage of priests? And
that's for the Church to decide, not me. The Church hasn't always had celibate priests, but it has had them for about 1,000 years, and it's worked pretty well. So I would say, if you want my personal judgment, that the state of sex and marriage today is so confusing that this is a very bad time to have married priests. It would make for confusion. And I don't think we have a shortage of priests. I think we have, if anything, too many priests. Not that there are a lot of bad ones, but I think we need a few really good priests rather than a greater number. I think the biggest shortage we have is the other kind of fathers, good fathers. That's the vocation that's the most important one.
John, how does that answer strike you?
You know, I would think it's quite surprising. I would consider Mr. Kraft or Professor Kraft Orthodox Catholic, and considering that the scriptural support of married priests, elders, is apostolic, certainly, and it's also an apostolic succession. The apostles appointed married individuals to continue the priesthood. So I think it should be optional, in my view, but I, as far as having an overabundance of priests,
that's not what you expected. You were surprised by that. Dr. Kraft.
That was meant to be argumentative.
Indeed, yeah. So, but it is the case that we are extremely confused about sex, sexuality, and marriage at this moment in our history.
Yep.
And it's hard to see how married priests would add an element of clarity to that. The witness of celibacy seems to add an element of clarity.
Yeah, yeah. And there's texts in the Bible that seem to point in the direction of celibacy too. St. Paul practically says, if you're married, you worry about things of the world, and you're not totally dedicated to God. And that's not something that makes married priests impossible, but it's a practical problem.
Thank you, John, for that call. Eileen in Seattle, Washington, listening on EWTN. You are on with Dr. Peter Kraft. What's your question?
Thank you so much. Dr. Kraft, I'm a big fan, have all your books. My son went to Boston College. That's where I was acquainted with you, your material the first time. But I wanted to tell the listeners, I have never had a stumbling block with the real presence in the Eucharist, although I never felt that my feelings were not involved at all. And I always prayed that maybe my feelings would be involved one day. And a couple summers ago, I was walking home from church, and there was an outdoor procession with the real presence. And I was going to my car, and I had this notion, said, Eileen, I'm right here. I'm right here. See you later. And that just swept my whole being, and I went from the I still go just on faith. It doesn't happen all the time, but I'm so grateful for that experience.
God answered your prayer. Feelings are wonderful, but they're not the thing that drives you. There's an image I love from a Chinese Christian mystic. Faith, fact, and feeling are three men walking along the wall. Fact goes first, faith goes second and keeps his eyes on fact, and feeling comes along. But at one point, faith turns his eyes away from fact and looks back to see how feeling is doing, and both he and feeling fall off the wall.
What a wonderful...
We have to keep our eyes on the truth.
Thank you, Eileen, for that testimony, and we appreciate that call. We go now to Brittany in Peoria, Illinois, listening on 94.3 FM. Brittany, you're on with Dr. Peter Kraft. What's your question?
Yes, I was raised in a Pentecostal minister's home, and I'm actually a new convert to Catholicism. And my question is, how common is like the infilling of the Holy Spirit by evidence of speaking tongues in the Catholic community?
Well, the charismatic movement has happened in the Catholic Church over the last couple of decades, and most recent popes have been personally charismatic. So it's a part of the gospel. It's in the Bible. It's good. Many of the people in it, in both Catholic and Protestant versions, are sort of flaky, and sometimes they emphasize their experience at the expense of doctrine. But in itself, this is a divine gift, and we definitely need it. The Holy Spirit is the power source that makes the church move.
Brittany?
Yes, I'm here.
I thought you had a follow-up.
I was driving past a police officer, and I'm like, hi. And then my hand, my Bluetooth is kind of
You're supposed to pull over for this. You are supposed to pull over when calling. Brittany, I'm not going to report you, though. thank you very much for your call. You know, when you think about the things that Catholics have to learn from Protestants, it seems like the affective side of yep. the faith. Am I in the ballpark when I say that, Dr. Kraft?
Yeah. That's a psychological thing, a cultural thing. It's not a doctrinal division, but certainly the heart is as important as the head. And if too many Protestants emphasize the heart at the expense of the head, I think too many Catholics emphasize the head at the expense of the heart. We need them both.
Well, do you give much thought then to... what ecumenism means, I know you have a chapter, Ecumenism and World Religions, in your book, but this idea of Christians working to come together, even if it's arduous work, even if it's a work of centuries, how does that relate to the, you know, the relations with Buddhists, Muslims, Hindus, people who are not
Christian? Well, we're never, to the end of time, going to totally agree with non-Christians. Christ is a hard line drawn in the sand, and if you believe that Christ is the Son of God, you're a Christian, and if you don't, you're not. That's a clear line. But within Christianity, the division in Christ's visible body is a scandal that has to be overcome, and we can hope that it can be overcome. Meanwhile, we can learn whatever truths and goodnesses and pieces of beauty we can find in other world religions. Nobody's totally wrong. Everybody sees some truth.
But that's not so. So the ecumenism that we have with our Protestant brothers and sisters, with Orthodox, it's of a different nature than relations with other religions.
Very different. Yes, it's a reconciliation among brothers.
Yeah. A note asked is, do Protestants and Catholics both believe in the Trinity, or do they believe the same things about the Trinity?
Yes, they do. For the first 1,000 years, there were no differences. All Christians believed the same things. So that is our common basis and foundation, yes. Catholics, Orthodox, Anglicans, Biblical Protestants, the biggest division in people who call themselves Christians is between the Biblical, Orthodox, historic Christians and the modernists or liberals who don't believe in the supernatural. And don't believe in miracles. That's a heresy. That's not just a schism.
And isn't that a line that cuts across all of the Christian churches? There are those who are on one side of the line that is, I've given up on the supernatural. And those who have not given up on the supernatural.
Yep. This is why Flannery O'Connor, back in the 50s, talking to an audience of Southern Baptists, said, I, as a Catholic, am closer to some of you than I am to some of the heretical theologians in my own church who don't believe in miracles. And you're closer to the Pope, even though you don't know it, than you are to some of the theologians in your church who are liberals, modernists.
Oh, I'd love to hear.
They didn't understand it at the time. But
no, they didn't. Right. I was going to say, I would love to hear how they reacted to that. Because Flannery O'Connor,
I think today a lot would say, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, right.
In progress.
But the world has, maybe she was prophetic in many ways. Well, she was in her writing prophetic about the direction the world was heading with these ideas. And she, in her, all of her characters, I think, or most of her characters, are Protestant Christians.
Because that's the South, the Bible Belt.
Yep. Don, in Indiana, you are on with Dr. Peter Kraft. What's your question?
I'd like to make a comment about. I'm a lifelong Catholic, and my experience with people in general, that some people do not really find God and Jesus in the church that they're raised in, and a Catholic who switches to Protestant or Protestant to Catholic or one Protestant to another Protestant, and they find God and Jesus when they switch.
And if that's so, that's our fault, and we've got a clean house. Yep. Only when Protestants feel as if they're coming home, when they become Catholics, will they come home.
Well,
so we've got to be certain of that foundation.
I wonder if it's sometimes the case, too, that we don't listen as children, and then somebody gets us as an adult, and we listen, and they're not from the tradition we were born in. That has to do with our own readiness.
Yeah, the latest Pew Research poll showed that more people are changing religions now than ever before in history, probably because of delayed adolescence. You know, adolescence is a time of rebellion, and when that's extended into the 20s, that's the time people leave whatever religion they're born in and look for another one. It's a natural development.
I think we have time for one more call, maybe two. I don't know. Chris in Keller, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are on with Dr. Peter Kraft. What's your question?
Thank you. It's an honor to speak with you, Dr. Kraft. Quick question as a follow-up to a prior one. You talked about people in the charismatic movement speaking in tongues, that there's an element of it that's, quote-unquote, a little bit flaky. And I like that answer, but for the sake of the listening audience, could you clarify what you might consider to be Catholic about charismatic participation and speaking in tongues, and what kind of things might be flaky and why?
Well, what's Catholic about it is it's always existed in the church. It's in the Bible. Many of the saints had charismatic gifts. What's flaky about it is the style, and that's negotiable. That's not a doctrine. But what's dangerous about it is that you can get so caught up into it that you make it the be-all and end-all of your religion. And if somebody's not charismatic, they're not really Christian. That's very narrow-minded.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for that call, Chris. We do appreciate it. 888-318-7884 is the number. And Dr. Kraft, just before we go, who's your reader for this book? I mean, who would you – I note that the cover – I know you don't design the cover, but it has the Alpha, the Omega, and then it has the Keys of St. Peter, which represent the Catholic Church. It has the Bible. Do you want Catholics and Protestants to both pick the book up?
Absolutely. That's why I made the title Catholics and Protestants.
All right.
Because we can learn something from each other, both of us.
It certainly appears so. And you can find out what we can learn from each other if you pick up the book Catholics and Protestants, What We Can Learn from Each Other by Dr. Peter Kraft. I didn't realize that I was quite so short a time. So I will thank you, Dr. Kraft, for spending this hour with us. It was just wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. God bless you.
And thank you to all of our listeners who have joined us this week. Especially, I want to say a final thank you to those who supported us this week as we came to you asking for your support during our radio drive. Jesus Christ is the light of nations. We'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.